WAER Sports proudly presents the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
Goalpost goes down for just the seventh time in program history. Syracuse football has secured a top 10 win in the Dome.
Freeman straight away elevates and slams. Ladies and gentlemen, Donnie Freeman is here in the 315.
And it's misery at the hands of Maryland. Syracuse, with its closest shot at a championship in over a decade, gets sent home.
Hearing from a host of guests.
Super excited to welcome back onto the podcast the voice of Syracuse men's lacrosse, Tim Leonard.
Now Jason Benetti, voice of the Detroit Tigers.
And providing all the hot takes.
If Syracuse beats Miami, there are no questions. This program is headed in the right direction. Fran Brown is the leader of the future.
These are guys that can make impacts on day one. You're going to see that presence. That just when Syracuse in the past, when you look at their offensive line and defensive line, they were undersized in committing penalties. Now, they might still commit penalties. Who knows? But at least you know they're not going to be undersized.
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast, and it starts right now.
Welcome into the Ostrom Avenue Podcast, AJ Myers, alongside Griffin Bloomstein, and it's mid-October, and that means it's a new era of the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. We're super, super thrilled to welcome in the third member of the Ostrom Ave Pod group. I feel like we need a better term for that, but either way, Josh Rothert, welcome to the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. We're super happy to have you, and tell the audience a little bit about yourself, and obviously you're going to Syracuse, of course. But, you know, what outside of Syracuse, what are your interests sports-wise?
Yeah, thanks. Thank you, AJ and Griffin, for having me. I'm very excited to be here and hopefully be here for the next 3 years. A little bit about myself. I'm from Michigan. Huge Lions fan. Love the Lions. The NBA starts tonight. And I'm trying to get back into the NBA. The Pistons, more of a bad boys era. Lover there. Otherwise, just love sports and very excited to do the pod with you guys.
Awesome. Can't wait. We needed some central area sports love. I like that Detroit because it was a lot of, you know, Jordan before you, Josh, it was Jordan Leonard. And, you know, he was New York area. Griffin's Boston, unfortunately. So we needed that middle of the pack area. Is that a good statement by me, Griff?
Well, you said Boston, unfortunately. Like, I mean, come on. Uh-huh. The Patriots are rolling right now. The Eagles got a lucky win.
They are. They are.
Lions looked good last night. Jahmyr Gibbs is pretty tough, but
gritty. He's the best running back in the NFL.
Help me fantasy big time. There we go.
So that's why you're off to a good start, Josh, is because AJ got your running back in fantasy. You know, that's what you're saying. You know, this is when we usually pick up the weather. Are we keeping that? Like, do we change?
I mean, that was very in and out. You know. Old our frequent listeners, Josh, I don't know if you know, but Jordan loved to talk about the weather. We kind of picked it up, but I feel like, Griff, we've been a little bit away from it this time around, this fall at least. But now the weather's changing.
Yeah. I know my grandparents would definitely appreciate if we had a weather update.
All right, let's go full weather update. I'm all for these, you know, overcast days. I do need the sunshine, but overcast I'm okay with.
It was rainy yesterday on my walk back from class, and I think it's probably the last time we see 60 degrees this week. I'm not a meteorologist, and I'm probably just as good as anyone that does weather. But
I mean, I thought we had some rain today. We also had some sun. There was also some overcast. Today we got a little bit of everything. I think. I mean, I just can't wait till like the mid February day when we get like 70 degrees and it feels like, or 60 degrees and it feels like 80. That's what I'm already looking forward to.
Next day it snows.
Yeah, and the next day it snows four feet. Or I don't know. After a rough winter last winter, I am pretty ecstatic about hopefully not having that again. Josh, you weren't here, but you were here. You tried, like that winter, brutal. You got the worst winter for your first year. And you can only get better from there, hopefully.
Winters haven't been too bad in Michigan. I think last winter was probably twice as bad as any recent winter in Michigan. We probably get half the snow that Syracuse gets. So that was definitely different than I'm used to.
Yeah, last winter here was It was a lot. It was in, my 4 years. Last year was by far the worst. The two priors just got really cold, but in terms of volume of snow, last year was awful. So hopefully it's a little different this year. And now transitioning back to the sports side, away from the weather, it's always hard to get to weather to sports. That's one thing Jordan was great at. He got to weather to sports really well. Before we go on the hill, though, I do want to talk about the NBA because it's back. Josh, you mentioned you're getting back into it. Me and Griff are pretty passionate NBA fans. The Sixers and Celtics, they play tonight. They play tomorrow night. The NBA, we're recording this Tuesday. You may be listening a little bit later in the week, but we're recording this Tuesday night. The NBA is back on NBC, which is great because there's plenty of SU alums there. I'm excited about this NBA season as a Sixers fan, Griff, because I think we can handle your Celtics every time we meet.
I doubt that. But, you guys don't have to face Jason Tatum. Peyton Pritchard might drop a 30 bomb on your head. I might have to go for Jaylen Brown for Halloween because I don't have a costume. Yeah, and it's like 10 days out. And, this is just classic Griffin, just not having a costume. So
Me too.
before you talk about the Pistons, Josh, you got a costume in mind?
We did a group Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles last year.
Boy, I love that. I love that.
I feel like shelling out $100+ on costumes again, so might
That's fair.
Run that back this year.
As well, yeah.
Otherwise, it's probably just the very average Joe of just an NBA or NFL jersey, and that mm-hmm. works.
You fit right in, Josh. That's exactly what me and Griff always do.
I think it was fifth through senior year is probably everyone but like two or everyone every year but one is Jaylen Brown. Hey, why not? That's what I'm not a big Halloween guy, but
when I was younger, I was. I mean, I like candy, but I've always said this, I'm more of an ice cream person. And you don't get ice cream and go trick or treating.
It's true. maybe Syracuse needs to go out and find a new quarterback costume.
Wow. All right.
Hey, that's a good transition.
That is a decent transition, but I wanted to hit on the NBA briefly. Josh, are you excited about your Pistons? I know you said you're getting back into it.
I think the most important thing that the Pistons need to do this year is take advantage of the injuries. They're Absolutely. Never going to have a season again where Jason Tatum and Tyrese Halliburton are out for the entire season. And mm-hmm. watching the Pistons-Knicks Eastern Conference semifinals last year, they were two or three plays away from beating the Knicks in five games. So I think the Pistons absolutely have the roster. It's just going to be, can they put it all together when it matters? I mean, they were very close to beating the Knicks last year. So,
yeah, no doubt about it. And I'd say the same thing for the Sixers. You got to take advantage of these injuries. But if you're watching the NBA this week or, the rest of this year, you'll notice there is only one Syracuse alum in the league. And this is a conversation, a bit of a heated one, me and Griff had over the summer. Jeremy Grant, he's on the Portland Trail Blazers. He's a fine player. He's not an all-star or anything. He's not a great player. He's probably coming off the bench for the Trail Blazers. But I think this is a real problem for Syracuse. I mean, you have no representation in the NBA at whatsoever. Like, no one is going from Syracuse to the NBA anymore. And I wonder, when is this going to change? I said it over the summer. Is Donnie Freeman the one that breaks that? I mean, a lot needs to happen for him this year for that to happen. But I feel like possibly he could finally be the one that kind of breaks this, rut of just no Syracuse representation in the league.
I mean, I won't let you slander Jeremy Grant because, geez, I mean, he's making like 40 mil a year, 30 mil
yeah,
a year.
He's overpaid.
Well, yes, I mean.
Like Tobias Harris, you want a Piston shout out there. Have fun watching him, Josh.
That's not a fun
guy. Not a fan of Tobias Harris.
Anyways, Jeremy Grant, supporter of Syracuse basketball, so I'm never gonna hate on the guy. Syracuse has had some G League guys, Jesse Edwards. Well, if you can call Jesse Edwards,
like,
a Syracuse
I mean, starting
guy.
Night in and
okay,
night
okay.
out.
Yeah,
it's not there
since O'Shea. I mean, O'Shea Brissett's not in the league.
Nope,
he's never really that good.
Nope,
Melo, Michael Carter Williams is gone.
Yep.
Deion Waiters is gone, long gone. I think Donnie could be that guy. I also think Sadiq White, depending on the year that Syracuse has and the year that he has specifically, is a guy that just because of his size and athleticism, could draw some NBA interest. Guy that's probably 6'8", 6'9", long, forward, athletic, can dunk. And people have been raving about his defense, around the team and around the coaching staff. So it'll be interesting. I mean, if a guy can dunk and play defense at that size really well, he'll get a spot in the NBA. We'll see if his jump shot or ball handling skills progress as the season goes on. But I think between Donnie and Sadiq, I think Syracuse has a good chance to get someone drafted this year. It'll be interesting, though. I don't necessarily think they will have a star anytime soon unless Kyan just goes ham. I'm not sure Sadiq White is going to be a star necessarily. I don't think Kyan's going to be a star either, but I think maybe his potential is just a little higher because he's a playmaking shot creator.
I think it's really interesting. I mean, obviously not a huge NBA fan, but the Utah Jazz are kind of an embarrassing franchise. Is there really 12, 14 better players than Judah Mintz on the Utah Jazz? I think
Great
Judah Mintz
point.
could absolutely be on an NBA roster right now.
Great point.
And I know you mentioned Sadiq White and Donnie Freeman in the NBA, but one that I kind of take more of a closer look at, and he's obviously a freshman this year, Luke Fennell is a 6'6" player who can play both guard positions, and he's kind of a 3-and-D guy. I think he's probably going to be one of the defensive leaders for Syracuse this year. That's what most NBA teams are looking for. I look at a guy like Max Christie, who was drafted in the first round by the Lakers, and was traded to the Mavericks in that blockbuster. He's a guy who's a 3-and-D wing who's carved out minutes on two good rosters in the NBA. That's someone I could definitely see Luke Fennell compared to when we look at someone 2, 3 years down the road when the NBA draft rolls around.
Certainly, that Judah Mintz point is why we brought that conversation up in the summer, because he was balling out for the Sixers in the summer league. He didn't make the Sixers roster, and I want to say maybe he went overseas. I'm not entirely sure where he ended up, but absolutely. I mean, he does seem like a guy that could like come off the bench for an NBA team. So that's a great point, Josh. And Syracuse men's and women's basketball, they get rolling next week. They got two exhibition games. The women's team has one on Tuesday, and the men's team has one on Wednesday. So we'll briefly recap those on next week's episode, because basketball season's really, it's ramping up. It's getting there in full swing, and that's something we're super excited for. We talked to Mike Waters a few weeks ago. I highly recommend everyone go listen to that. Mike broke everything down really well and gets you perfectly set up for men's basketball season. That, who knows, has some expectations, see if it pans out. Something that is not panning out, unfortunately, for Syracuse's football. Another tough loss Saturday night against Pitt, 30-13. And once again, it starts with the quarterback play. You know, Fran Brown, I think, surprised some people in the second half. I was there. The loudest the crowd got all night was maybe second loudest. The interception in that first half, it got pretty loud. But the second loudest was when Luke Kearney checked in that third quarter. And everyone presumed he'd be the starter the rest of the half. No, he was the starter for like two and a half series, three series. And then Ricky Collins was back in. Another poor game. Either quarterback could really do anything at all. Ricky Collins did have two touchdown passes, but those interceptions, Griffin, continue to just haunt him.
Yeah, I mean, the first drive was pretty rough. Just a minute into the game, Ricky just turns the ball over, and everyone just sighs and goes, yeah, that's nothing changed in the week of practice. Ricky Collins is still a quarterback that is going to turn the ball over. I just don't like how they didn't give a real chance to Luke Kearney. They only let him through three passes. He just handed the ball off, and the offensive line wasn't really doing much for Yasin Willis. And I mean, that's just because Pittsburgh just could play the run because Syracuse has no passing threat at whatsoever. And so they didn't even let Luke Kearney really run an offense. And then Fran after the game says that Luke Kearney can't really run the offense because he doesn't really know all the plays. And then I'm thinking, well, if Luke Kearney doesn't know all the plays, and then Fran says he has a better eye, he's one of the smartest quarterbacks he's ever worked with, then like, what's the problem? Like, is Fran and Jeff Nixon just not teaching him the offensive playbook? Is he not learning it? Is Ricky Collins taking the sole reps and the majority of reps that Luke Kearney's not given in practice enough time to
play football. Like, it doesn't really make much sense. Like, the utilization, if that's a
There you
word,
go. Good job.
of Luke Kearney in that game just didn't really make sense. I think I would have loved to see him for like a couple, like more than 2.5 drives, and then take him out in the middle of a drive is just kind of crazy. I just wasn't impressed with how Syracuse just handled the quarterback position.
Yeah, you said it right there. I think the fact that they put Kearney in to light a spark in Ricky's head to get him to focus on what should be an important game. I mean, he's probably fighting for the starting job with Kearney right now. And I didn't agree with Fran doing that to put Luke Kearney in the game to not even throw a pass on his first drive. Ricky can stand in there and hand the ball off. And I think you also hit the nail on the head with the fact that every team Syracuse plays until Ricky shows he can throw the ball downfield is going to sell out against the run. And Yasin Willis averaged under 2 yards per carry because they were able to stack the box. Georgia Tech will probably do the same thing this week. And you know, one other thing, Syracuse, the quarterback room, Luke Kearney was the third string quarterback just under a month ago. So I think it is entirely possible that he doesn't know the full extent of the playbook because he probably wasn't expected to play at all this year, outside of those snaps he got in the Colgate game where he ran his only play for a touchdown. I think Kearney was expected to just come in here and learn this year. And if he got some playing time down the line, that was great. And now he's kind of being thrust into this role of maybe he is the starting quarterback for this team. So obviously a lot to figure out for Fran Brown and his staff.
Yeah, certainly. And I was at that spring game. I mentioned this, so I didn't think I'd be having to mention the spring game so much this fall season, but I have. I was there, and that's when Fran Brown looked everyone in the eyes and said, "Ricky is the guy." And Luke Kearney, I thought in that spring game was okay. I thought Ja'Cari Williams was like really impressive in the spring game, and obviously he is the third string, and I don't not I'm not saying put Ja'Cari Williams in, but I think it's interesting that Kearney was then selected. I wonder what he did over the summer to really gain the credibility over Ja'Cari. But the biggest issue I have with what is going on right now, and it revolves around Fran Brown. This is the first thing I think I've ever been kind of disappointed in him, is the kind of not the lie, but the misleading he provided everyone, the media fans, in saying that Steve Angeli came in to compete with Ricky Collins. There's no way. There's no way. And there's no way it was a close battle, because after this Pitt game, Fran Brown tells everyone, "Oh, Ricky's still developing. He's not at the level that an Angeli was at." That, he even said that's why we got a Steve Angeli, because he had more experience. He was more ready for these moments. So it is kind of worrisome that, after the spring game, this team really had this, Fran Brown and this team had no plan, had no direction until they got Steve Angeli from Notre Dame. And unfortunately, everyone's looking at win totals, projections. I mean, who knows if they could beat UNC? I mean, I don't think they really stand a chance against Georgia Tech, unfortunately, unless Ricky Collins can really turn things around. But that was the whole idea. After a bye week, Griffin, he would turn things around, and that simply wasn't the case.
Nope, it was not. It's just the talent's not there at the moment.
No.
And the passing ability just doesn't exist with Ricky Collins at the current moment. Like you can't focus on a second target. You can't read defenses. Now he showed a little bit on the ground, and if he wants to turn into a Haynes King style quarterback, then go for it. And Jeff Nixon can set dial up some plays for that. But with what Syracuse wants to do and throw the ball 40 times a game, Ricky Collins is not the quarterback to do it. And clearly, Syracuse doesn't have the faith that Luke Kearney can do it either. It seemed like Ja'Cari Williams was a little hurt in the middle of the season, and that's why they kind of went to Luke Kearney earlier in that game where he scored the touchdown. I think it'll be interesting to see if they go to Ja'Cari at all. I mean, Ja'Cari was committed to Georgia Tech for a couple weeks
Yeah.
back in the day, and then decommitted and then committed to Syracuse. So I mean, there's a little thing there. I was always a big Ja'Cari Williams guy. I think he has a little potential to throw the ball, but I mean, you've never seen it. Like Syracuse just put in the true freshman and over him, and it says a little something about how good Luke Kearney can be. I think the big thing is if Syracuse can't pass the ball, and teams are just committing the run 100%, they need to find a way to get some sort of offense going. Whether it's just, I mean, last year Syracuse would run jet sweeps with Trevor Peña so often, so often. They haven't done it at all this season. Nothing. You get creative. Run a flea flicker. Run some. I mean, they did try to run a flea flicker. Did not work. Just do some trick plays. Like, find something that'll work.
I mean, you took the words right out of my mouth with the jet sweeps. I was thinking that while you were talking, I'd like to see Jonte Cook, Daryl Gill get in space. And the thing about the trick play is, I mean, you can't even trust Ricky to throw a 10-yard in route. What makes you think he's going to be able to manage a trick play? I mean, to surprise the defense. I mean, Dan Villari is capable of being a wildcat quarterback. I mean, how long is the list going to get? I mean, Angeli's gone. Collins and Carney and Jakari. Like, is it possible we see five different people take snaps at quarterback this year for Syracuse? Has it gotten that bad? I mean, we had this issue last year. Syracuse beats a ranked Georgia Tech team, and then all of a sudden, the fans' expectations go through the roof. And then they have a letdown game against Stanford. They lose another game later in the year against Boston College that they shouldn't have lost. And I feel like that happened again this year. Yeah, Angeli went down with the torn Achilles against Clemson, but they beat Clemson in Death Valley, and all of a sudden the fan base once again is saying, this is a 9-win team. This is a 10-win team. And the reality of it is that they lost too much talent, and it's just not the reality.
Yeah, it is. It's a different picture than it was last year. That is without a doubt. It's going to be really interesting to see how things get rolled out against Georgia Tech quarterback wise. I've always kind of abided by this. Two quarterbacks is no quarterback. They got to pick one. Let one quarterback master the playbook. I know Fran Brown said after the game that neither quarterback knows the playbook, which, like, I don't know. Like, how is
That's
that
a,
possible? Like, I don't
yeah.
understand that. Like, yeah, they're backups, but they're in the room. Like, they were in the room with Angeli. I was kind of perplexed by that one from Fran Brown, but they got to figure it out. I mean, it's going to be Ricky Collins to start, but I mean, as soon as he throws a pick, and I mean, he's thrown a pick every game he's been out there, it seems inevitable. I don't think he had a pick against Clemson, but since that Clemson game, he's thrown a pick every time. So it's inevitable he's probably going to turn the ball over. You know, everyone's going to look at that sideline, look at Luke Kearney, and I do worry next week could be a blowout, but there's one shining moment, or there's one really good thing about this team, and it's defensively. They were excellent, Griffin. I mean, it was a really good defensive display from this team. You know, maybe that's something to build off of. I know Pitt put up 30 points, but you know, everyone was talking about Mason Heinschel this, Mason Heinschel that. I didn't think he looked that good. I thought he looked kind of average at best. He had a turnover, and I give a lot of credit to that defense, who I think really stepped up and one of the best defensive displays I think we've seen in a long time under Fran Brown.
I think it might be one of the best next to that Miami game. And it was interesting. Partner Doozy said, I think it was either Tuesday or Monday or Tuesday. We're recording this on Tuesday, but that the dome crowd really affected Pitt's
It was
offense
a good crowd. Probably the best this year.
more than the Penn more than the Florida State game that Mason Heinschel started. And so that's interesting. I mean, obviously the dome plays a factor, and Syracuse still can't didn't sell out the dome, and its fans left midway through per usual. But I think for Syracuse's defense, just the pass rush. I mean, Syracuse had seven sacks against Pittsburgh. The whole season before Saturday's game, it was eight. And then that was been a thing all season. Fran Brown was like, yeah, I don't really care about the pass rush as long as Syracuse is winning games. And then they weren't winning games, and the pass rush wasn't there. But then on Saturday, all of a sudden, Syracuse got to the quarterback with ease, and I'm not sure how much of it is the pass rush itself, how much of it is a weak or bad Pittsburgh offensive line, but it says something that Syracuse could get to the quarterback. Kevin Jobity Jr. with three sacks. Jamie Tremble is recording sacks left and right now. And so Syracuse had these spurts where the defense, it wasn't even just the pass rush, the whole defense looked really good and stopping Pitt's offense, and Syracuse's offense was giving it no help. The punt return touchdown, I mean, we haven't even hit on that yet. That's just mismanagement by the coaching staff, and Fran Brown took accountability for that. Syracuse was in this game. Like, Syracuse could have won this game. This was a winnable game.
when I thought it wasn't, when, I mean, most of Syracuse fans probably didn't think it was a winnable game. It turned out to be a winnable game, and Syracuse still managed to lose by 17, but it felt much worse.
I think one thing, the 7 sacks is incredible, first of all. I think no matter, I mean, even if it's a freshman quarterback who's holding onto the ball too long, getting to the quarterback 7 times was probably should have been the reason they won the game, but it wasn't. I think one thing that the defense really needs to do, which they started doing in this Pitt game, is if the offense is going to struggle as much as it is, the defense needs to work that much harder to give Syracuse good starting field position. A lot of the times when Syracuse is losing these games, I just go back to the SMU game 2 weeks ago. SMU was starting half of their drives inside Syracuse territory, whether Fran Brown was rolling the dice deep in his own territory or Ricky Collins was making a bad pass. That Davion Kerr interception in that Pitt game was crucial because it gave Ricky Collins a 13-yard field, and that's just going to increase the success of the offense. When Ricky Collins only has to get 15 yards instead of 75, that is a major difference. And, you know, Syracuse is only outgained by 50 yards in this Pitt game. They outgained SMU last week. So if the defense can just get that much more of an edge and give Syracuse better starting field position, I mean, the Orange are going to be in these games, whether the offense plays good or not.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. And I think they were in this Pitt game, but the offense just didn't give them anything. They couldn't get any momentum except that fourth quarter. Ricky Collins, he's got to use his legs more. I think he has those legs to use. And that's kind of what kind of gave him a spark. I think it gave him some confidence. It made the things a lot easier to get down the field. I don't know where this run game has gone to. We haven't really touched on that. These running backs have totally disappeared. Yasin Willis, it's a shell of himself. He just had 16 rushing yards against Pitt, and then Will Nixon had a whopping 9 yards. So that is completely gone as well. And I think Georgia Tech, they are steamrolling teams right now. They're the seventh best team in the country, one of the best Georgia Tech teams probably ever. They're hunting for that college football playoffs, that ACC title, and what is a wide ACC, wide open ACC. I don't think anyone would have expected Georgia Tech to be the favorites to win the ACC. We talked with Georgia Tech's play-by-play man. We talked to him last year. It's great to have him back on the pod. Andy Demetra, he's a fantastic guy to get on the pod. He, of course, is a WAR alum, Syracuse alum as well, which is awesome. Before we get to him, though, Griff, any way Syracuse stays in this game against Georgia Tech?
Nope. Yeah, I don't think so. I think it's a 12 o'clock ESPN right
Yeah.
after game day,
That's how they beat
and
Clemson. That's how they beat Clemson.
yeah, but Clemson, there's Steve Angeli. Steve Angeli will not be making the trip, most likely, to Atlanta, Bobby Dodd Stadium. I don't think Syracuse is good enough to keep up. I mean, offensively, Georgia Tech is just really, really good, and I talked with Andy about it. I just don't think Syracuse can match the points that Georgia Tech is going to score. Even if Syracuse's defense plays well, they're Georgia Tech is still going to put up points, and so I think that's the biggest thing is there's not going to be, if there wasn't a spark after the bye week, there's not going to be a spark after this week of practice. And it's unfortunate because after that in the first half of that Clemson game, all was looking bright, and then ever since there, it's been downhill, 3 straight losses. Don't see that stopping this week.
I think Georgia Tech, being the seventh best team in the country, is a little too high. I know they're undefeated, and AJ, you said they blow teams out. I'm not totally impressed. I think their win last week against Duke was kind of a weaker win. They had a 95-yard fumble return touchdown. Duke had an illegal formation on a fourth and goal from the one, and they had a muff snap on a 25-yard field goal. And I mean, they walked off Wake Forest and they walked off Clemson, and I didn't think they were really the better team in either of those games, even with Clemson completely falling off the earth after that one. I think Georgia Tech is not as good as we think, but then again, they're playing Syracuse, so they're probably still going to win by 20 points. I think Haynes King probably has another all-out day on the ground. The only Power Four quarterback to have 100 yards in 4 games this year, and as good as Syracuse defense was against Pitt, I don't think they're stopping Haynes King. Georgia Tech probably rolls to its eighth straight win, which they are 7-0 for the first time since 1967, I believe.
Yeah, it's something. I never thought I'd be seeing Georgia Tech seventh in the country. And you make a fair point. Some games have been closer than what you would expect. And you can argue Syracuse handled Clemson better than Georgia Tech did. It will be interesting. Griffin handled the conversation with Andy. We'll send it over to them. And another great conversation with Andy talking about the Yellow Jackets.
We now have the pleasure of being joined by Georgia Tech play-by-play broadcaster and former Syracuse alum and WAER sports director, Andy Demetra. Andy, thank you so much for joining me on the Ostrom Avenue podcast. Second time guest, how are you doing today?
Doing well. I'm happy to be invited back. Good that we can catch up.
Yeah, well, we were just talking about it before we started recording, but Syracuse and Georgia Tech played a crazy game last year inside the Dome. This season, a little different stakes, but I want to go back to last year's Georgia Tech program. Really strong start, obviously, out in Dublin, beating Florida State. And it was 7-6 season, but how would you say last year's team or last year's season went, even though the record was the same as 2023, but there were some more high quality wins on that schedule?
There were, and I think Georgia Tech fans will say there should have been one more regular season win, and it was the eight overtime game in Athens. And then to, played flat in the bowl game, which accounted for that 7-6 final record, albeit against what's turned out to be a very good Vanderbilt team. I think some of the issues that maybe flared up with Georgia Tech and its inconsistency week to week, they've addressed that, and that's the reason why they're now sitting at 7-0. But I think it was another marker in the ascent of this program under Brent Key, and you're seeing a more fully realized version of that this year. It's really no different, this Georgia Tech team, than last year, except they're deeper, but they still play with a lot of poise, a lot of maturity. And I think now in some of these close games that Georgia Tech had, where you have some second half inflection points, they're able to meet the moment. And maybe had they not gone 7-6 last year and learning some of those hard lessons, they wouldn't be standing here at 7-0 and 3-0 in the ACC right now.
How do you think some of those big games, like the big win over Florida State, that really fun game to watch against Georgia, the win against Miami, did for the program building down in Georgia Tech?
Well, I think it kind of confirmed to the players and to the coaches that they have a team with the right mindset, that they don't get rattled. The moment doesn't get too big for them. And even in that matchup in Athens, you saw them go toe to toe with a team that had been on a long multi-year home win streak. And so I think some of those close games reinforce that they have the fortitude, the toughness, not only mentally, but physically to hold up in some of those tough, close, taut games. And, look, any team that it has high ambitions, that it's not going to be a breeze every single Saturday. You're going to have to weather some adversity and some ebbs and flows throughout a game, but it's how you respond to that that kind of defines how your career, how your season unfolds. And we're seeing Georgia Tech show that poise and that maturity all throughout this season. You saw flashes of it last year, but now you're seeing longer stretches of it, and it's starting to pay off for Georgia Tech.
Last year's schedule, obviously a gauntlet playing all those incredibly tough teams. This season's schedule's been a little easier. Clemson, the only ranked team that Georgia Tech has played, obviously, we know how Clemson's season is gone. But do you think that this year's schedule plays a factor into how well Georgia Tech has been? And obviously, the next four games aren't as tough as necessarily the top 25 teams, and then Georgia, the last game of the season. But how do you think this year's schedule has played into a factor of the team's success?
Well, to be perfectly candid, I think that's why expectations were high for Georgia Tech, because you could game out the schedule and see that it was on the more manageable side. They didn't face Louisville. They wouldn't face SMU. They wouldn't face Miami. They wouldn't face Florida State, even though that bloom is kind of off the rose in Tallahassee. But it is never easy to win on the road in the ACC, no matter the caliber of opponent. And Georgia Tech going on the road to begin the year versus Colorado and turn it over on their first three possessions, yet still come back and win the game in a very hostile environment in Boulder, then to overcome a 17-point deficit at Wake Forest. And yeah, Wake Forest was very modestly thought of beginning this year, but there's a reason why not many teams can overcome a 17-point deficit on the road. It simply doesn't happen often, and Georgia Tech was able to kind of find its offense and figure out a way as that game unfolded. And then, let's not discount that Duke game last Saturday on the road. And Georgia Tech's at that point now where that target is growing ever bigger on their back, and they knew they'd be getting Duke's best shot. And Duke was also 3-0 in the ACC, and they'd been averaging 42.7 points across those three conference wins. So for Tech to hold them to just 18 points on their home field and score 17 unanswered in the fourth quarter and put that game away, that was another game that kind of certifies who Georgia Tech is and what they can become this year. So while, yeah, the schedule may avoid some of the other so-called heavy hitters of the league this year, at least those that were thought of in preseason, you still have to go and get the job done every Saturday, and Georgia Tech has done that.
Normally for Georgia Tech, it's been the offense giving them the spark, but you mentioned the defense against Duke, and that was kind of the big two red zone stops against the Blue Devils, including that 95-yard scoop and score. How has GT's defense been able to set the tone this year when that offense has been in need of a spark?
I think they're getting better week by week. They have a new defensive coordinator in Blake Gideon who came over from Texas. This is his first time as a defensive coordinator at the FBS level. And I think, as with any first-year defensive coordinator, even though he came in highly recommended, sometimes it takes a while for you to find your play-calling rhythm. What was encouraging for Georgia Tech in that Duke game was the way they shut down the run. If you look statistically, that is maybe a weakness of Georgia Tech, at least getting consistent stops on the ground, but they were able to really force Duke into becoming one-dimensional on offense and having to ride the arm of Darian Mensah. So I think that was very encouraging for Georgia Tech. They got those red zone stops. It was in many ways a textbook definition of bend but don't break versus Duke, but you still have to deliver in those moments, and the Georgia Tech defense did. I think they still have room to grow as far as getting takeaways. That count is not where it needs to be, and we know that Syracuse has struggled with coughing the ball up. And so Georgia Tech has not been a dominant takeaway-forcing team this season, but yet they get off the field on third down. They do a pretty good job, and I think the other thing, too, is they really upgraded their quality depth on defense this offseason, not only on the line, but in the back four. And that's where you're seeing it start to pay off as this season has gone on.
You mentioned Syracuse's struggles offensively, and that certainly has been the case. What Pittsburgh did really well last week was just let Ricky Collins try to throw the ball and pressure the offensive line, send a lot of guys, and just play for the run. Do you think that's something that Georgia Tech is going to be able to do? Just focus on the run, make sure Syracuse can't get the run game going, and just allow Ricky Collins to try to figure it out offensively?
And I think it's easy to consider that the template for defending Ricky Collins moving forward. But at the same time, Syracuse is scheming up some plays that'll make him more comfortable, whether it's rolling him out of the pocket, giving him half field reads, and turning him loose in the running game. I think, you have to respect his athleticism and how dynamic he can be should he call his own number. Remember that Georgia Tech is playing without its top cover corner, Damari Harvey. He dislocated his ankle in that Virginia Tech win. Even though he should be back by the end of the regular season, they won't have him available on Saturday. And there were times where it felt like Duke was picking on some of those cornerbacks for Georgia Tech, though they did get a little tighter in their coverage as the second half unfolded. I think Georgia Tech also in that second half, Griffin did a good job of getting some pressure and forcing Mensah into some off-platform throws and moving his feet. I think that's probably their best course of action. Of course, I'm not in those defensive game planning meetings, but it seemed to work well against one of the more highly regarded passers in the ACC. And I think anytime you can cage the pocket against somebody like Ricky Collins, that might be your best course of action. But as you know, when you're dealing with 18 to 24-year-olds, redemption is always 1 week and four quarters away. And Georgia Tech is respectful enough of Ricky Collins. Brent Key had some very glowing comments about him in his press conference on Tuesday. They know what type of weapon he can be, and they can't make it easy on him. Because if so, he's on ACC scholarship like everybody else, and he certainly has the arm talent to be able to gather some confidence as the game goes on.
I was going to ask about Harvey, but good thing you already touched on that. Another guy that missed against Duke, Akello Stone, one of the top pass rushers, defensive tackle for Georgia Tech, didn't play against Duke. Do you know if there's any injury update around him and if he's going to get going for Syracuse?
No, not certain on Akello Stone, but Georgia Tech, again, they have good depth, especially up the middle with Jordan Vandenberg, who was second team All ACC last year. Matthew Alexander is a transfer, a veteran from UCF. He's done nicely as well. And so, regardless of Stone's availability, I think Georgia Tech in a game and a half has shown that, they're not, there's not too much of a drop off right now between the tackles. And I think that's an encouraging thing.
All right, now we get to talk about the fun stuff, the offense. Haynes King, Jamal Haynes, third season together at Georgia Tech. How have you seen them grow over the course of those 3 years and now into their final season
Yeah, I think this is the longest interview I've ever done before being asked the first
here?
question about Haynes King. So you set the record. That is admirable discipline and restraint on your part. But no, anytime you have a 3-year starting quarterback and a 3-year running back, it bodes well for your prospects entering the season. And Haynes King, I mean, it borders on trite at this point, but he really epitomizes the toughness of this Georgia Tech team. 10 rushing touchdowns. Just somebody who's so skilled at manipulating the mesh. And it's so easy for teams to say, well, let's just take away Haynes King's running ability. But Georgia Tech has so many different formations and motions and counterplays. They continually find ways to keep defenses off balance. And whether Haynes King is pulling it and using his own legs or whether he's delivering it to Jamal Haynes, you have two guys who are very good in getting positive yards. But I will say this as well. It's not all on the legs of Jamal Haynes this year. Yeah, he's a two-time All-ACC back, but you look at Malachi Hosley, he actually is averaging slightly more yards per game than Jamal Haynes. So they're able to roll those guys in, keep them fresh. They have a lot of good complementary pieces in that backfield. And of course, you have to respect the running ability of Haynes King, on top of him being a very accurate passer, close to 70% completion percentage this year after he broke the ACC single season completion percentage record a year ago. So, yeah, between Haynes King and Jamal Haynes, or as we like to call them, the law office of Haynes and Haynes, that's a pretty good starting point and building block for Buster Faulkner's offense.
With the style of offense that GT likes to run, the wear and tear is always a concern. Injuries up front, always a concern. How have the players, whether it's Haynes King or Jamal Haynes, the offensive line been holding up so far this season?
You know what, Brent Key, and I'm sure he would say this while knocking on wood, they've been very good in avoiding any major injuries. But he also says the most important skill you can have right now at this time of the season is player availability. And there's a reason why they tried to get a lot of guys snaps early in the season, even in games like against Colorado and Clemson, because they knew that they would need those guys. Should injuries kind of throw a wrench into their personnel groupings or their depth chart at this time of the year? And so, Georgia Tech is, I think, and anytime you're number 7 in the nation, you have to have some good fortune from an injury standpoint. And Georgia Tech has benefited from that, but they're also able to weather some of those injuries because of their commitment to depth and playing guys so that the lights aren't going to be too bright for them if they do have to come in because of a battlefield promotion due to injuries. So they've been very good when it comes to staying healthy as a team can be at this time of the year, but also they were very deliberate in making sure they got guys experience that they could bank should they need them for later on in the year.
Brent Key, rather, is one of the more fun coaches, in my opinion, to watch. And what do you think it says about him and his style of coaching that he's been able to keep the law office of Haynes and Haynes at Georgia Tech? And the world of college football right now, you never know what loyalties lie where and the transfer portal and everything. But them staying at Georgia Tech for another year, what does that say about Brent Key?
I think it not only says about Brent Key, but about this institute as a whole, that there is a lot of alignment. And Georgia Tech has done a very good job on an administrative level of committing money, whether it's through NIL or coaches' salaries or through facilities, to make sure that they can retain their roster. I think, whenever you experience success, teams are always going to catch a wandering eye towards your talent. And Georgia Tech was not immune from that this offseason. They lost their top receiver, Eric Singleton, who was arguably one of the most sought-after wide receivers in the portal. But Georgia Tech also went out and got a guy like Eric Rivers, who was an AP third-team All-American at FIU. And, they're addressing their own needs in the transfer portal. And, whether it's with a Haynes King or a Jamal Haynes or some of the returning guys, they've shown that they're willing to commit the resources to have continuity, which I think accounts for so much of a team's success in this day and age. And certainly for a program like Georgia Tech, I think that's such an underappreciated element of how this team has gotten to 7-0 is you just look at their continuity. That they were able to retain a lot of their talent, particularly at skill positions, so that they could continue their rise in 2025. So it not only says that about Brent Key and the loyalty he's kind of engendered with his players, but also just what this athletic department has done as a whole to make sure that they're going to be competitive in all phases of a program in college football 2025.
Brent Key, a Georgia Tech alum. I would be remiss if I didn't ask about the crazy coaching carousel that's going to happen, what, this offseason and towards the end of the season. Do you think there's anything that Georgia Tech can do, or do you think there is strong commitment from Brent Key to keep him in Atlanta?
Well, you remember he went to Georgia Tech. He began his career as a GA at Georgia Tech. And for fact, this is his 25th season of coaching. His very first game as a college coach was as a graduate assistant. 2001, Georgia Tech opened that season versus Syracuse in the kickoff classic at Giant Stadium. But that's apropos of nothing. No, look, I think, and Brent has kind of alluded to this, that, whenever you have success, with that comes attention, it comes exposure, and that's great. Georgia Tech, whether it's Brent Key or his individual players, they have all earned that. But I think the one reason why Brent Key connects with this fan base so much is that he is Georgia Tech through and through. And that's just not 2025 Brent Key talking when he's got the number seven ranked team in the nation. This was the Brent Key who talked when he took over as interim head coach in 2022 and in 2023 when they finally earned bowl eligibility for the first time in 5 years. He has a lot of loyalty toward this place, and I think that counts for a lot. Of course, nobody can peer into a crystal ball as far as, the spins of the coaching carousel, but I think Georgia Tech fans feel somewhat confident that they have a guy who believes in what this institute stands for and loves being here, loves knowing that he has his alma mater at heights that they haven't reached in the better part of 2 decades. I'm sure Brent Key will be sought after like any coach is in this day and age, but I think there's a lot of loyalty in the bank with Brent Key and Georgia Tech.
Well, hopefully for Georgia Tech, that is the case. And, the highest ranking in 11 years, highest ranking in the regular season in 16 years, number seven in the country, big deal down in Atlanta. What do you expect to get from this game against Syracuse and against a team that, it's beaten some good teams, lost its quarterback? What do you expect Georgia Tech to take from this game?
Well, they have to stick to their identity. And, you got to tip your cap to Syracuse. 7 sacks, 13 TFLs really jumps off the page and what they did versus Pitt to neutralize their running game. Georgia Tech's identity will always be through the run. And so I don't think that they will necessarily stray from that. But you have to make sure that you're staying on schedule, that you're converting third downs. Can they make Ricky Collins uncomfortable? Can they prevent some of those explosive plays that can deliver a lot of confidence to a quarterback who might be feeling a little shaky. But, again, redemption is always just one game away. And there's enough skilled talent. Brent Key had a lot of compliments to give to Willis and to Nixon and that Syracuse running game. And they have to make sure that they can contain that aspect of Syracuse's offense. They have to make sure that they don't gift wrap short fields through turnovers to Syracuse. It's interesting that Georgia Tech, for as awful as they were in giving up the football their first 2 games, 5 turnovers through their first 2 games, they've only turned it over once since. And so they have to make sure that they value the football. They have to win the special teams game. They've done a really good job of that this year. And just prevent Ricky Collins from getting into a rhythm where he gathers confidence as the game goes on. And oftentimes when you're flying high like this, it's about how you can manage the expectations and not be out of character, not let that success seduce you into straying from who you were those first 7 games of the year. So, for Georgia Tech, to their credit, they've been very businesslike and have had a very businesslike, workmanlike approach through this 7-0 start. It hasn't always resulted in the flashiest of scores, but they get the result they had been seeking at the beginning of the day. So that's kind of Georgia Tech's approach, no different than how it's been the first 7 weeks of the season. And they know that they will, like usual, get Syracuse's best shot.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time, as always. Really appreciate having you on. Enjoy the game Saturday.
I appreciate that, Griffin. Thank you.
Big thank you to Andy and thanks to Griffin for handling that interview. It should be another good one this weekend. Syracuse, Georgia Tech. Last time these two teams faced off, it was thrilling. It was one of the best games of the season last year, and Syracuse had a ton of those. It's weird. Since that Clemson game, Syracuse has really not had a good moment. Maybe tomorrow or maybe Saturday, things can finally get back on track for Fran Brown and the Orange. No matter what happens, the Ostrom Avenue podcast will have you covered no matter what next week. And we talk basketball. We talk about basketball games that are happening. Men's and women's both have exhibition games that we'll dive into. Hopefully there are commanding wins from both teams. And lots to talk about for the basketball teams. And there will still be plenty to talk about for football as well with Fran Brown and what is happening with that program and kind of the downhill spiral they've been on. But who knows, maybe they'll turn things around against Georgia Tech. Noon Saturday, that's a 11:30 McClurg remodeling countdown to kickoff, and then the double overtime takes you all the way up until 5 p.m. Be sure to call in, get your voice heard over the air, get your thoughts out on what you think about Syracuse and Fran Brown and where this program's headed the rest of the way, maybe after an impressive upset win over the Yellow Jackets. Yet to be seen. Be sure to listen to previous episodes of the Ostrom Avenue podcast wherever you get your podcast or at WAER.org. But until then, we will see you next week.